You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout. Hello and welcome to episode 111 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm very glad to be joined this afternoon by Kaylee. Kaylee, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
No, thanks so much for coming on. We have some really interesting topics to discuss, all about your son Micah and his journey thus far with Hirschsprungs. Yeah. But I guess we'll kind of start where we usually do, kind of from the beginning, if you want to take us from there.
Yeah. So pregnancy went perfectly fine. You know, pregnancy's tyrant. So, you know, the usual pregnancy symptoms that you get. Micah was a little bit slow growing in the womb, and then he kind of caught up. And then towards the end, he was a few reduced movements. So I went into hospital to be induced, to obviously for them to bring labor on. And I was in hospital for a few days. Labor went fine. Everything was fine with him. And then when he was born, he had his first feed and slept, I want to say, for 7 hours straight, which is quite unusual for a newborn baby, just born.
Yeah.
So when I obviously slept alongside him, I'd just given birth. It was during COVID, well, like COVID time. So it was only me allowed to be with him. And obviously nurses would come in the room and whatnot, or midwives. But yeah, there was no other parents there over that night. It was just me. So obviously I'd just given birth and I slept with him. He was asleep, I was asleep. And then I woke up the next morning and I was like, he's not woke up crying for a feed. This is my fourth child. This is quite unusual. I've not experienced this before. So I queried it. I was like, you know, he's not woke up to be fed and he doesn't appear to be hungry. So I was trying to feed him, just didn't want to be fed at all. And he kept being sick. He kept bringing up mucus. Again, he was number four. So I kept raising it and was saying, this doesn't appear to be right. I've never experienced this with my children before. And obviously Hirschsprungs is quite a rare condition, so I don't think a lot of people would automatically go to, oh, something's not quite right here with this little one. So it was a lot of, oh, it'll be mucus on his tummy from the amniotic fluid inside your womb, you know, we might just be really tired, just keep trying. But he hadn't gone to the toilet either, and we went home on a feeding plan. Even though I was a bit concerned, we went home on a feeding plan. He hadn't gone to the toilet still. And the vomiting just got worse and worse, to the point where we couldn't even lay him flat. Every time we'd lay him flat, he would like start to be sick mucus, but he'd be choking on the sick. And myself and dad were becoming quite concerned at that point. We took it in shifts that night because it was in the middle of the night. So we took it in shifts. We tried to call for help, but again, there was an expectation that it was just mucus in his tummy, and the midwife would be able to see him the next morning. Next morning, midwife came out and she was not best pleased. He was really poorly at this point. And he ended up back at hospital, still hadn't gone to the toilet, was still being sick. And then from that point, it kind of gets quick and blurry and scary.
I can imagine so. It's the thing I tend to just find when talking to people, talking to mothers especially, that everything happens
so fast, but it's so many things that happen in such a short space of time that they tend to just sort of blur. And then when you revisit them 5 years, I think in this case, 5 years down the line, 5 or 6 years down the line, you actually think, well, actually loads of things have happened, and it maybe doesn't quite register at the time. But it's everything that you're bringing up there sounds like absolute classic Hirschsprungs, like the bile, the vomiting, the lack of meconium, everything there is kind of, it's completely classic Hirschsprungs. But like you said, it's so rare that, again, like a lot of people I talk to, you're told, oh, they're just a slow feeder. Oh, it's just, you know, maybe they were born a bit quick, so it might just be mucus, it might just be this. And I guess, I know they have to rule everything out first, but at what point was sort of Hirschsprungs mentioned?
I want to say that late that evening. So we were at our local hospital by where we live. We live outside, just outside of Liverpool. And he was taken back onto the maternity ward. Again, when I went back onto that ward, nobody kind of took it seriously. I kept saying, he's not feeding. He's not feeding. Like, he's still not gone to the toilet. I'm getting really concerned. And I was asked to give him, I was trying to feed him myself, and I was told to give him formula. Again, having had more than one child, I didn't want to do that. And I was confident enough to say, no, I don't, that's not how he's going to be fed. But then I was persuaded to try, because at this point it was coming up to, I think he must have been about 18, 19 hours old. And he just wasn't able to take a substantial feed at all. So I did give in, and I got a couple of mils inside him. And that feed literally meant that they then started taking things really serious, because as soon as it hit him, his tummy just went dumpf, and he looked like he was pregnant. His tummy just really, really swelled. And he had this rash, an umbilical rash. So it was like this really prominent purple rash up the, it was in like a line up his tummy. And I kept saying that doesn't appear, I don't like the look of that. That's quite concerning to me as well. At this point, they got a senior neonatal doctor in to come and check on him. And very quickly, Micah was x-rayed, NG tube. He ended up back in neonatal. He was on 2-to-1 care. Again, because it was COVID and we'd been allowed out the hospital and come back in, he had to be segregated from all the neonatal babies because, obviously, COVID, and you don't want to pass anything on to neonatal babies. So, well, to anybody, but especially a premature baby. So he was segregated from a ward, from the neonatal unit. He was put on 2-to-1 cares in a room, in his own little isolation room. And at that point, they started to liaise with Alder Hey. And they discussed Micah with the surgeon at Alder Hey. And they came to me and Dad and said, we think it could be a number of things. And that's when Hirschsprungs came up. And I was like, what?
Like everybody.
What's that? Like, so they said cystic fibrosis as well. We were told it could have cystic fibrosis, but Micah's mixed race. So the likelihood of Micah having cystic fibrosis was even slimmer than, you know, other children, because it's more prevalent in white children. Just like sickle cell would be more likely to be prevalent in Micah's genes because he's mixed race, he's less likely to have cystic fibrosis, and you get sticky bowel with cystic fibrosis, which can block the bowel. So they were more convinced it would be a Hirschsprung's just because of his genetic composition, I suppose. And they, this has got to be into the night now. Like it's quite late. The surgeons have clocked off. They're going home. So he was on like, I think it was half hour obs, constantly being observed. If he had have took a turn for the worst, they had him ready to be blue lighted straight over to Alderhay. He was really, really poorly. They were treating him for sepsis. Again, this purple rash on the tummy was a side effect of a symptom of sepsis. And he was okay throughout the night. He was on antibiotics, nil by mouth at this point, so we could not feed him. NG tubed, cannulas and wires everywhere. It was quite scary. And the plan was to move him to Alderhay the next morning, which went ahead. We went over to Alderhay. We met with Miss Olland. Absolutely fantastic surgeon. I owe her everything. I absolutely adore her. She is, I love the bones of her. She's amazing. We met with Miss Almond and she was wanting to run some tests, but by the time we got admitted and stuff, the surgeries were starting to, even though we went over quite early, but you know, with the admittance and observations and things, the day's just moving and moving and moving. So what they wanted to do is when they went inside, they operated on Mike, they wanted the labs to be open to be able to get immediate cell results because he was presenting as a child who had long segment Hirschsprung's. So the plan was to watch him wait overnight and keep an eye on him, keep the antibiotics going. I think at this point he was on three different types of antibiotics, IV, hourly, half hour, hourly obs, and we had doctors coming in and out the room all night, absolutely no sleep. And mind, at this point, I'm not even 48 hours post-birth. So it was horrendous. I wanted to feed my child, I wanted to breastfeed my child, and I couldn't. So I was having to take myself away to express. I just felt like a mum who was helpless. And the only thing I could do for him was express milk. So that's what I did. I was just expressing, expressing, expressing. Because I knew that would be beneficial for him when he could finally have food. I just remember crying a lot. It was really scary. They'd done a contrast test that evening. And it was at that point we were told, yeah, this is without even having surgery. I think they took him in the night time and they done the contrast test up his bottom with the contrast to see how far it would flow, and it just wasn't moving. His bowel was completely blocked. And it was at that point they said, look, we are like, we can't say 100%, but we are pretty certain this is a child with Hirschsprung's disease. So then, again, watch him wait overnight, hourly obs, half hour, hourly obs. And Miss Solomon came back the next morning. This rash on the tummy was getting worse. And she said, no, I'm scheduling to surgery, and took him to surgery. That, to me, was probably one of the hardest parts. I can feel myself getting upset talking about it.
No, mate.
It was the hardest. I couldn't take him into theatre. I just broke down outside the theatre. I had to get Dad to do it, and a porter had to. I'm forever grateful for this porter. You could see how distressed I was, and he stayed outside the room with me. My whole body literally hit the floor. I just signed forms that said how dangerous it was, and I'd only just met him. I'd only had him 2 days, not even that. He was in theatre for a really long time. I think it was about 6-7 hours. His bowel was blocked. He came back with a stoma and an ileostomy. his bladder wasn't emptying prior, so he wasn't going to the toilet because the pressure of his bowel was stopping his bladder from emptying as well. But actually, when they looked into it, it was just the pressure from his bowel being so blocked. So his bladder's been perfectly fine since. And yeah, then life as a stoma mum started.
Yeah, I think, again, I mean, I've never been there myself, but I have spoken to many people when your child goes into surgery, you know, something that 48 hours before, or probably less than 48 hours before, was not even a consideration of any proportion. And then suddenly you're having to do all of these things, and this sort of complete whirlwind of emotion and just so many things that are going on. To me, it sounds perfectly normal that would hit you in some way physically. You know, like you said, you know, body just kind of felt numb and just fell to the floor. I mean, that sounds to me like that's a normal reaction to what's happened, because it is trauma, isn't it? It's you know, you have gone through a traumatic experience, and that is going to have a physical effect on your body.
Yeah, but your body's already tired because you've just given birth. You've carried a baby for 9 months. You've given birth, which is really tiring for a woman to go through. Then you are hit with this. And mine, the first night that Micah came home, we didn't sleep because he was being sick. So we were sleep deprived, worry stricken. Like, it was just so, it was such a hard time. But it was confusing as well because we didn't know what Hirschsprung's was. And we kept getting told, don't Google. Don't go on but, Google.
But don't you Google. Do, though. You, like, I mean, did you?
Oh, yeah, I Googled. Yeah,
exactly. Everyone does. Even though you're told not to, like, you know, what's the first thing you're going to do? You find out that your child potentially has this condition that nobody's ever heard of. So, of course, you want to know more.
I think I probably learned more about Hirschsprung's disease in the first few days of being told not to Google, because I was on Google a lot.
Of course you were. Like, you know, I know why they say it. I know that because they don't want you to scare yourself and read all the things that could possibly happen. It's like when you said with signing the form, you know, all they have to legally, you know, list all the things that may potentially happen. And like when you Google, you get, you know, because with Hirschsprung's, there's so many different types. And there's so many different, like you mentioned there, they're testing for cystic fibrosis and all sorts. And I know why they tell you not to Google, but I'm sure everyone does it.
Well, everyone Googles. I'd be surprised if people don't. I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, as you said, it's not a good thing to do it, though. We all do it, but it's not good because you will get worst case scenario. But yeah. I was under the impression that he was going to come back with a long segment diagnosis as well. So it was a worst case scenario. That's what we thought we were looking at, because he was so symptomatic. But actually, he's short segment. So, you know, and that doesn't come without its challenges, don't get me wrong. But because obviously he was so symptomatic, it was a case of, oh my days, like, this is horrendous. This is, what is it? You know, there's not a lot of people. I mean, even today, we can go to an appointment with, I don't know, just a medical practitioner, doesn't any department, and they'll say, have you got any underlying medical conditions? And you say, he's got Hirschsprung's disease. What's that? And I'm now having to explain, well, Hirschsprung's is a... Because you have to clue yourself up on it, because there's so many people who just don't know what it is.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I say I get it. I've done that for 30 years. When people going, what on earth is that? But it's, And part of me is like, well, you know, as a doctor, you can't know everything about everything. I get that. But I guess that's probably still, it's still the frustrating point where you go, okay, right, I have to explain it again and again and again and again and again. Especially as it can be quite a complex explanation.
Yes, and how it presents differently in each child as well. And, you know, I've had a doctor say, oh, he's had his operation now, so, you know, he'll be fine. It's not the case. So, you know, it's, yeah, you kind of have to become a little bit thick-skinned and advocate for your child. And obviously, as you'll know, as you get older, you start to advocate for yourself. But yeah, it was an unknown world. Didn't even know the condition existed. Just didn't have a clue.
No. There's one thing that you did mention that I haven't heard before, which is the purple rash. I've never come across that with anyone before. And he said that was linked to, was it sepsis?
So they thought that he potentially had sepsis because children with sepsis can present with like a mottly rash on the skin. So obviously we've got a really poorly tiled here, cover all bases, antibiotics, it's broad spectrum antibiotics. And yeah, so I think he when he was tested after surgery, his infection markers were great. So I don't particularly know if he definitely had it or not, but he was treated as though he did. I think he was definitely, if he didn't have it, he was definitely on his way. He was definitely something going on because his infection markers were checked days after he'd been in the hospital to see whether it was. And but at this point, he'd already been on antibiotics since he was admitted at the first hospital. Because you go on a sepsis pathway, and for one of the first protocols is a broad spectrum antibiotic. It's not a case of let's test and wait for a result and then we'll treat. It's a case of we show a markers here, let's treat, because we all know how dangerous sepsis can be.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. I've been there, had it. I know exactly that. It can be very, very, very dangerous indeed. It's just something I've never heard before with the purple rash. So it's, yeah, that's something. That's why I like doing this. I come across things and I hear different things every single time. It's like you said, you know, everybody's journey and everybody's story with Hirschsprung's is slightly different. And like going back to what you said about going to like GPs and whatnot and saying, oh, it's got Hirschsprung's, and then they say, oh, well, you know, he's a bit older now, he surely got over that. It's like that's just not the case, is it?
No, it's not. And I think it does an injustice for those who aren't over it, like put it in the bunny quotation marks. It's a lifelong condition. It's, you're never just over it. And there's children out there that are by far worse than Micah. So you can't just blanket it as if you've had an operation and then it's done and dusted, because that's not the case. We fortunately are in a position now where Micah's stoma was reversed at 11 months old. It had to be reversed. We wanted to allow his bowel a little bit more time to rest after multiple procedures. I mean, they all knew him by name and face and all the hay. He was a little superstar. But so they wanted to allow him some time to let his bowel rest and recuperate. Because as you'll know, having a lot of interventions and things like that, the bowel swells. So we wanted to allow that time, but Michael was failing to thrive. So because he had an ileostomy and he's got a fast transit, well, he had a fast transit. Food just wasn't touching the sides and he weren't growing. He was really small, wasn't gaining weight very well. The salts were all over the place. He was on all different medications. And we got to a point where it was like, do you know what? I think the best thing for him is to reverse the stoma and let's see how he does. So he had his pull-through procedure at 8 weeks old. He then had... He had his pull-through procedure at 8 weeks old. He then had like quite a few procedures to stretch the bowel and the dilations. I couldn't do it. Like I tried and it was quite traumatic. And Micah's pull-through healed on a bit of an angle. So when you were trying to do a dilation on his bowel, he would scream the house down. It was so painful for him to go through, and I could not do that to my child. That was probably one of the traumatizing things for me, as well as the aftercare. Give me a stoma any day of the week, I took to it like a duck to water. Like, but trying to dilate his bowel and give him washouts, he'd scream. He hated it, and it was awful for him. And you feel really guilty because you're doing that to your child. It's just horrible.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because, okay, technically, kind of physically, yes, but the reasons why you're doing it is obviously to help them, but how do you explain that to a child? You can't, can you?
No, you can't explain it. And they're looking at you as if to say, why are you doing this to me? And I think... You know, if it was just a cry because he didn't like it, and it was a little bit, you know, oh, go away from me, you don't like, fair enough. But as I said, his bowel kind of healed on a bit of an angle. So every time we tried to go in, you had to like fiddle with the dilation tool to get it at the right angle. Otherwise, you can't get it. You couldn't get it in. And it was just really uncomfortable, like really, like it was painful for him. And then it was painful for parents having to do that to him. And we went back quite a few times and were saying, you know, we can't do this, it's traumatizing for him, to the point where we used to take him to Walter Hay and he'd look at the doctors and he'd cry because he'd associated them with, this is not a nice experience for me. It just didn't like it. So he had to go under an anesthetic quite a few times to be dilated. And then yeah, he had his, I think he turned one in the April, and it was around the January, February time he had his reversal. And he was, I want to say he was great after. He wasn't, you know, he'd never been to the toilet before. It's a whole host of different side effects of having Hirschsprungs. His pole bottom was an absolute agony, and he's getting used to using his bottom, and it was a difficult time again.
Yeah, I can imagine that sort of potty training stage for Hirschsprung's children is a very difficult stage, I think, for anybody anyway, but I think especially for Hirschsprung's children, I guess.
Yeah, well, we're there now.
Ah, right, yes, okay. So you're not out the woods and in the clear at all yet.
Yeah, well, he's pulled up free all day, and he only wears them for bed, because obviously when Micah goes to sleep, his body relaxes, and sometimes he'll go to the toilet in his sleep and he's got no control because he's relaxed. So he's pull-ups of a night, and he wears tenor pads and his underpants of a day, or a dad buys liners for him. But he's great, and it's just his life. Like, he's never known any different. This is just what it is. There's days where he'll say, Mummy needs to go to the toilet. And there's days where he will take himself off to the toilet and then he shouts you when he needs you to help him. And then there's days most days he will have at least a couple of accidents, and it's he'll come to you and he's like, I've had an accident today. Don't make a fuss about it. It's not, oh, why have you done that? You know, you need to use the toilet. It's okay, no problem. Let's clean you up. Because he can't help it sometimes. Like it's not like he's got control like other children. So it's just, it's matter of fact. Okay, come on, son, let's go get you cleaned up. And that's what it is. I don't even reward when he makes it to the toilet because I don't want to make a differentiation between the two.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes absolute sense. I mean, it is we as people with Hirschsprungs, we are, you know, whether we like it or not, we are going to be a bit different than other people. And yeah, no, that makes absolute sense to me. Absolute sense. But there was something I did want to bring up with you. I know we've chatted a little bit about this before, about the Matalan pajamas and your TV appearance.
Oh, my lovely TV appearance. So embarrassing. I mean, it's a great cause and I was really privileged to be asked to do it, but dearie me, yeah. ITV News, I think it was. Oh. So in 2021, Micah was nominated by Neonatal, because Micah spent 2 weeks on Neo, to be the face of the Matalan Neonatal Appeal. So he was asked to be one of the children that were advertised in that. So, but it wasn't just Micah, it was a family event. So myself, Micah, and Micah's three siblings, we all done the pajamas, which was lovely. It was a privilege to be asked to do that. And then when they done the 10-year anniversary, I think that was in 2023, they asked us to come back and do it again. And obviously, there's a comparison from Micah, there's this six-month-old baby. I don't even think he was 6 months. I think he was like around that marker in the first one. And then in the second one, he was 2. Maybe just turned 3. But yeah, we'd done it again. He was asked to do it again. And it was beautiful to see the difference in how he'd grown in the pajamas. So we all done it again. And I had to do an interview for ITV News, which was embarrassing. And yeah, he's been an ambassador for Alder Hey, a charity ambassador, as little faces on the Johnson's Johnson's website as well, because so many pence of every Johnson's go to Alder Hey, so he's done that as well. Yeah, it's lovely. It's a privilege to be asked.
Yeah, I can imagine it. I know media and TV is not everybody's cup of tea, but I guess when it's for such a cause that you're doing it for, I guess you kind of think, well, I'll brave it and do it type thing. Was that the sort of gist?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, you can't just, I feel uncomfortable in situations like this. I mean, even this is nerve-wracking for me. But it's a case of I suck it up and put myself out there alongside the children, because not only are you raising awareness for a wonderful hospital that treats children from all over, you know, it's raising money for the charity. I had the opportunity to raise awareness for Hirschsprung's disease as well, because a story was wrote about Micah, and it was that opportunity to be able to say, look, this is a condition that, you know, made my child really poorly. Not a lot of people know about it. We were featured in the Liverpool Echo as well. A story went in there. And that, again, spoke about Hirschsprung's disease and what Hirschsprung's was. So it's a bit of a, for me, but I suck it up because I think it's so important to raise awareness for Hirschsprungs and to get it known, because I feel like, as I've said it, I don't know how many times on this podcast, I have had four children. Michael was my fourth child. I had no idea what Hirschsprung's disease was. I think, and if I had had an ounce of any form of that information, that it could have been something, I would have had him in that A&E or neonatal department, wherever, as soon as I'd suspected there was something wrong. But I kept listening to, it's mucus on his tummy. And yeah, and I think sometimes awareness is key, isn't it? If you don't shout about it, people don't know.
Absolutely. And I think, and again, I've heard versions of that same story from people quite a few times, because you do trust the nurses and doctors, and again, this isn't having a go or whatever, because I know they do a very, very good job and save also a lot of lives. But sometimes, especially with Hirschsprungs, it is brushed off a little bit. And I think, like you say, the more awareness we can raise and the more people can think, oh, actually, the child is presenting X, Y, and Z, then maybe we'll just have a look to see if it's Hirschsprungs. Because also, that's the other thing, like you said, you had four children, no history of Hirschsprungs or whatever in the family. So the idea, and I get told this by people as well, and they say, oh, well, it's genetic. Well, not, I mean, yes, it passed through the genes, but not necessarily in terms of family. I mean,
well, it's a mutation, isn't it? So
it is, yeah.
Genetics mutate. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it does mean that if you've got one, you can have more with it. But if it's mutating, then it doesn't necessarily mean that the older child, the child before, is going to have the gene because it's mutated. That's my understanding anyway. I'm not a medical professional, so I could be wrong. There was some querying around testing Micah's older brother because he did present with a few symptoms when he was born, but actually he's been perfectly fine. He just didn't go to the toilet when he should have when he was born, but he did eventually go. So there were some questions around whether to test him, but he's great. He's perfectly fine. But yeah, so he's number four, and it was just never on my radar. I just didn't even know what it was.
No, but that's the case with so many people. I mean, people think that it just passes through the family, and oh, if you've got Hirschsprungs, then yeah, you must have had it somewhere along the line. But I speak to so many people, and again, it doesn't necessarily matter what type of Hirschsprungs either. There's a lot of people who have children with, you know, short segment or long segment or total colonic, whatever it might be, but have absolutely no history whatsoever. So there isn't so much a rhyme or reason. It would be lovely if we could find out, you know, however many years down the line, that this is why this happened. And I guess that's the struggle sometimes when you want to make logistical sense of stuff, as we always do as humans. We want to say, right, this happened because this happened because this happened. But sometimes we just can't. And I find that quite difficult. I don't know what it's like for you as well. Is that, do you think about that, or is it just kind of like, well, it happened? And
so when Micah was a little bit younger, yes, I kind of wanted them to have genetic testing to find out, you know, I could have genetic testing to see, because I think you can test the family. But actually, I'm not planning on having any more children, so it wouldn't really make any difference. I think there is scope for Micah to have a genetic test just to see if there's links to anything else. I think there was scope for Micah to have genetic testing. It's been discussed a few times. It's not happened as of yet. I don't know whether we will. I think it's just a sensible option, and it helps research as well. Micah was enrolled in a research study when he was a baby, and that's ongoing with Alder Hay. And I know I'm biased, because I absolutely adore Alder Hey. But they are putting so much effort into researching Hirschsprung's disease. Again, we were both at the conference. So I think anything that you can do to help with that research, I'm all for it, to get a better understanding as to how and why, and you know, how we can make things better moving forward, and different techniques and ways to help the children.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I thought the conference was great for that as well, because there's so many things that I learned from it that I'd never come across before, and just have like a day where we just chat about and chat about different things was excellent.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think genetic testing is something that I do talk to a lot of people about, and I think, yeah, I think that's incredibly important. But as we move sort of to later life, we've talked a little bit how Micah is now and how he's getting on. And I guess sort of after all the surgeries and the procedures and whatnot, what are your hopes for the future?
For Micah, I just hope he lives a full life, and doesn't let Hirschsprung's stand in his way, which he doesn't. I mean, as I said, it's all he's ever known. He goes to a normal school. He's doesn't really require much, but school are really on board. They're really good with, you know, not making a fuss if he has an accident. And I hope that continues as he ages. I think as he gets older, it may become a little bit difficult, but he's making progress. He's not regressing. And that's always a good sign. And I pray that continues for him. He's a right character, so he's going to be... He's a very clever little boy as well. He keeps me on my toes, that's all I'm saying.
Brilliant. No, that's fantastic. And thank you so much for coming on, and obviously all the work you do at Alder Hey as well in helping people stay safe and well and whatnot. But thank you so, so much for coming on and telling Micah's story. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprung's Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprung's_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.